Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Listen with Other, because grown-ups need story time too.
The Legend of the Merry Milkmaids by Giles Booth. Episode 2. A shot rang out. It was, the writer in Kate noted, a dark and stormy night. The Peanuts fan in Ian did the same. Though the house was now warming up and the main bedroom was cosier than the angular brick exterior might suggest, the windows were old and single glazed. The frames rattled as the storm approached, and they did not sleep well despite a supper of beans on toast and champagne. Ian tossed and turned and harrumphed and sighed. "So much for isolation and peace," said Kate.
"What was that?" said Kate.
"What was what?"
"That noise."
"The wind."
"The banging."
"Oh no, not this again. What time is it?" Kate looked at her phone.
3:43.
Kate waking at this time, claiming she could hear banging, was a recurring event. Ian blamed a Christmas ghost story they watched on TV around the same time as the final failed birthday party. A character kept being woken by a knock at his front door at 3:43 in the morning, and Ian was convinced the story had somehow hardwired itself into his wife's brain. "If it makes you happy, I'll go and look. Please." Ian fumbled for his phone and turned the torch on. "You could just turn the lights on." "Thank you, Scully." He turned the bedside light on, got up and went out onto the landing. As he walked down the stairs, he felt the need to call out mockingly, "Hello, hello, whoever you are, I'm coming, I'm coming." He reached the front door, which had small frosted panels of glazing. Lacking a spy hole, he peered through them as best he could. He could see nothing. There was a chain on the door, which he attached and opened the door a fraction. "Hello?" The wind battered the door and it strained against the chain. He unhooked it and opened it wider. A security light switched on and illuminated the short path and tiny front garden. There was no one there. He closed the door and chained it. He was tempted to lock it, but ever since he'd had fire warden training at work and the firefighter had told him that locked front doors was where they usually found the bodies, he'd never locked a door on the inside again. He shuddered, unsure if he was chilled by the cold air, the thought of the charred corpses of fire victims, or the idea of some ghostly presence banging on the door.
"Well," shouted Kate from upstairs.
"Nothing, nothing at all. I'll make you a chamomile tea."
"Thanks, love."
It was 4:33 when Ian was woken by a noise. He sat up in bed, unsure for a moment if he was still dreaming. He struggled to recall it. Had there been a hotel? A train journey? Both were common features in his dreams, but even thinking about them failed to hook the fading memory. Then he heard the noise again. Banging, he was sure of it. He was less sure whether to wake Kate, who was now snoring. The banging came again. He could not understand how Kate was sleeping through this when she was frequently woken by imaginary noises.
"Kate, I can't help it."
"No, no, not the snoring. Can you hear that noise?"
"What noise?"
The banging came again. "I'll go and investigate." Kate pulled the covers up around her as if they offered some kind of protection from a phantasmagorical apparition. Below, Ian called out. A voice called back.
"Hello, can you open the door? I'm drenched."
He undid the chain and opened the door. It was Margate Louise, holding a bright red wheelie suitcase and brandishing a bottle of fizz.
"Where's the birthday girl?"
"It's 4:30 in the morning. And you said you couldn't come. How did you even find us?"
"So many questions, sweetie. Aren't you going to invite me in over the threshold? I suppose I should have brought coal. I am dark-haired, though."
Kate and Ian rose early the next morning as they couldn't get back to sleep properly. They packed Margate Louise off to the single room in the turret and told her to get some sleep as they were too tired to party. Louise had given in, as she was tired herself after getting lost on the drive from Bristol. She found roads blocked by fallen trees, and it was, she said, a miracle that she'd found them at all, using her powers of deduction to locate the only Airbnb in the area. "Do you think we should wake her?" asked Ian, munching on a triangle of toast and marmalade. "Nah, we're only here for one more night, hardly worth her being here." There was a pause as they both considered the word night. "If the weather improves, it'd be nice to go for a walk," said Kate, changing the subject. "At least there's no DVD player, so we can't spend the evening watching a dreadful erotic thriller like last time she stayed," said Ian, changing it back again. "There are board games. We could play Scrabble." She'd play filthy, suggestive words. "You're right, she would. Monopoly, then. She'd offer to forego rent in exchange for a snog." "True. It means there's literally nothing we can do that she won't twist. Maybe we should just give in." "We didn't give in last time, not even when she pushed a packet of condoms under our bedroom door," said Kate. "I'm going to look out back." "What for?" "See what the weather's doing. Tried to check the forecast, but there's no signal on my phone." Ian unbolted the back door and Kate joined him, clutching her cup of tea. The sky was grey, but the rain had stopped. Surprisingly warm wind lashed their faces. The back garden was much larger than the front. A muddy lawn, some beds with bedraggled, unidentifiable plants, a shed with a sagging roof. The garden tapered uphill to a point at the far end, which made it look longer than it really was. And there stood the stone. It was about 6 feet tall, slightly wider at the top than the base. A stone owl ornament sat nearby in the border as if guarding it. They walked up the path to it and both touched the stone without quite knowing why. It was the highest point and they could see an avenue of bare trees in the field beyond. "Not very big, is it? Where's the rest of the circle?" asked Kate. Ian stood on tiptoe and looked over the hedge. "In that field, I can only see two other stones though." "Let's go for a walk." A voice rang out from above. "Morning, lovebirds, up with the lark." It was Margate Louise poking her head out of the turret window. "We're going for a walk," Ian called up. "Want to come?" "Love to. One mo, darlings." Ian looked at Kate. "What? It's a walk. What could possibly happen?" Margate Louise appeared remarkably quickly as Kate was clearing away the remains of their early breakfast. "There's still a bit of coffee in the pot. Bread's over there if you want toast," said Kate. "Just a quick sip of coffee for me. I'll eat something later. Where are you going for your walk?" Ian was in the corner of the kitchen, rifling through a wicker basket full of leaflets, advertising local attractions, old guidebooks and maps. "Thought we might go to Wormworld," he said. "Wormworld? Eel smokery, same thing. Oh, look, there's a history of Stanton Maltravers here." He held up an old, small pamphlet, badly printed with rust marks around the staples. "It has a map with a suggested walk and a section on the stones." "Let's have a look," said Margate Louise, putting on her reading glasses. Ian had never seen her wear glasses before. He liked the way it made her look suddenly less frivolous. "The Merry Milkmaid, stone circle of uncertain age or origin. Only three stones remain, making it more of a stone triangle than a stone circle. Various legends surround the stones. One is that three local milkmaids each fell unsuitably in love, one with the lord of the manor, one with a parish priest, and one with a married village schoolmaster. Their folly was punished when they were turned to stone by lightning strikes as they danced naked in a field on Midsummer's Eve. Another theory, favoured by this author, is that the stones were a different kind of folly, built in the late 1700s by Tertius Maltravers for his own amusement." "Tertius Maltravers sounds made up," snorted Kate. "Let's take this with us," said Ian, grabbing it out of Margate Louise's hand. Margate Louise downed her cold, dreggy coffee and put her coat on. Although the lodge was marked on the map in the guidebook, they had difficulty finding the footpath into the field where the other two stones stood. In the end, they gave up walking on the road and climbed over a low stone wall and walked across a muddy field, now devoid of whatever crop had grown there. The sky was blotchy with light and dark clouds. Sunlight looked like it might break through, but then so did rain. The field was on the brow of a hill, which made the sky seem bigger. There was not a house, a person, or even a bird to be seen anywhere. Just ranks of tall, thin, bare trees in the distance. "Do you think this is all right?" asked Ian. "Worried about an angry farmer?" asked Kate. "Randy Bullmore-like," said Margate Louise. Ian and Kate exchanged glances. The two other stones were at least 30 metres apart, of similar size and shape to the one in the garden. Margate Louise ran towards one of them, whooping as she stumbled over rutted mud. "Let's take one each," she cried. Ian ran towards the other stone in the field. "Oh, I'll just go back the way I came then, shall I?" said Kate. Ian ran back across the field in the direction of the house and waved at Kate to take the other stone in the field. He attempted to vault the hedge and fell over backwards in the mud. Margate Louise hooted with laughter. "I'll go back the way I came," he said. He reappeared slowly. Kate couldn't believe it. He was climbing the stone. "Ian, get down before you hurt yourself." Soon he was on top, waving his arms. "Happy birthday! Happy New Year!" he shouted. Margate Louise now began to climb her stone. Kate did not want to follow, but she noticed her stone was leaning and climbing it on all fours was actually quite easy. Soon the trio were atop the Merry Milkmaids, waving and whooping. A shot rang out. Ian, who was jumpy at the best of times, wobbled and fell off his stone in the garden. Margate Louise screamed. "I'm okay," he shouted. "Missed the owl. Landed in the border." A man in a flat cap holding a broken shotgun stood silhouetted on the ridge of the hill. "Get off my land," he yelled, and then burst out laughing. "Only kidding. I mean, this is my land, and I'd rather you didn't climb on those stones, but you're all right." Margate Louise jumped off her stone and approached him. He was slightly younger than she'd expected from his voice, in his 40s. She smiled and said, "I'm so very sorry. We were looking for the footpath." "You did give us a fright. Is that thing loaded?" asked Kate, approaching. The gunman showed his open weapon.
"Not any more. I was shooting rabbits. Sorry if I scared you. Assumed you're up from London, staying in the lodge. Couldn't resist a bit of sport."
"Yes, well, we are from London and we're staying in the lodge," said Kate.
"I know. I let it out to you. Thought it was just the two of you, mind."
"Our friend was an unexpected visitor. Last minute change of plans," said Louise.
"I see."
By now, Ian had emerged, covered in mud and bits of decaying foliage.
"Going birding in that camouflage, are we?" asked the gunman.
No, just exploring the stones. Fell in the compost," said Ian, taking the guidebook out of his coat pocket and waving it as an explanation.
"Ah, the myth of the Merry Milkmaids."
"You don't believe it then?" asked Louise.
"I probably should. We'd probably be good for the tourist trade, but I agree with the chap who wrote that book there. They're no more than 200 years old. The old lord of the manor..." "Where is the manor?" interrupted Ian.
"I'll get to that. The last lord of the manor was a reprobate. Spent the dwindling family fortune on follies, drink and women. The rest, as they say, he wasted. Died childless in a fire that destroyed the manor, along with a mistress and a young servant girl from the village. It was never rebuilt, and the land was sold on to neighbouring farms to pay off his debts."
"Where was the manor?"
"Over in the next field," said the cheerful gunman, waving over his shoulder. "All farmland now. You'd never know it was there. Anyway, enjoy your walk. Mind the storm's not over yet, so make sure you're indoors before nightfall. Footpath to the village is just behind the other stone. Keep left as you cross the field. You won't go wrong."
"Is there much in the village?" asked Kate.
"Since the pub closed, bugger all. Good day."
Their walk revealed that the gunman was not wrong. There were some beautifully restored houses in the village. The old post office, the old vicarage, the old dairy, the old forge. But nothing actually current, and nothing open. Everything was a mere echo of its former self. They felt like they were walking round a living museum of country life that was closed. There were expensive cars parked everywhere, but they didn't see any people. Ian assumed they were all indoors managing their portfolios. Even the church was padlocked shut, and they ended up sitting on a bench outside the boarded-up pub. The sign creaked as it swayed in the wind.
Welcome to Stanton Buggerall, twinned with Buggerall Magna, Buggerall Parva, and Great Buggerall, said Ian.
It started to rain again. Shall we head back? Said Kate. Sorry you're having a rotten birthday, said Margate Louise.
Yeah, sorry, love, added Ian.
It's okay. Better than doing nothing at home, when you can do nothing in the rain a long way from home, added Ian.
Back at the lodge, they examined their provisions. They had half a loaf of wholemeal bread that was on the turn when Ian had packed it, a bottle of red wine, Margate Louise's bottle of cheap fizz, pasta, a jar of pesto, and a packet of chocolate biscuits.
Looks like pasta for supper then, he said.
There's got to be somewhere around here we can get food. Look, I'll go and have an explore in my car. You two have some peace and quiet, said Margate Louise.
No one argued with this unexpected thoughtfulness, and Kate and Ian had a cosy afternoon reading. It was dark by the time Margate Louise returned, laden with carrier bags.
It's getting wild out there again. They said on the radio it's the tail end of the storm, but feels like a whole new one to me. Anyway, I found a lovely farm shop and I had provisions.
She unpacked the bags. There were two large bottles of local cider, bread, cheeses, posh crisps and two huge pies.
Wasn't sure if you're still veggie, Kate. One steak and kidney, that's the one with the triangle on top. The other's roast vegetable. Shall I pop the oven on to warm them through?
Kate and Ian were impressed by Margate Louise's bounty. They drank cider together and ate the fancy crisps and chattered amiably in the kitchen while the pies warmed through.
She'd had various jobs since they last saw her,
in shops and cafes, and then, surprisingly, a brief spell as a care worker, which, even more surprisingly, she said she quite enjoyed, but packed it in because the hours and pay were so bad. Her love life had settled down somewhat, having had two reasonably long-term relationships with an artist, female, and a bookshop owner, male, which she strongly hinted had overlapped by several months. The bookshop had gone bust and the owner had moved back to London to find work, which had made Margate Louise realise that she'd been more in love with the idea of living over a bookshop at the seaside than with the actual owner of the bookshop. So she'd stayed in Margate and moved back to her old flat, which she'd sublet to an old uni friend. As Storm Arthur's tail lashed the lodge, pies were eaten. Margate Louise and Ian sharing the steak and kidney, Kate having a third of the vegetable one. The fizz evaporated and cheese was then taken in the snug sitting room with the bread and the bottle of wine. Kate was rather dreading what might come next and was not disappointed when, before 11 o'clock, Margate Louise announced she was off to bed, alone.
No, really? Protested Kate.
Yes, I'm beat. Long drive in the morning. What time do we need to be out of here?
10, I think, said Ian.
Ouch. Well, in that case, I'm certainly heading up. I can't take the booze like I used to. Lightweight Louise, you can call me now. Good night.
Ian and Kate sat in silence for a while.
Well, that did not go how I expected, said Ian.
Indeed. So much better. Or are you disappointed?
God, no.
I mean, don't mind me, you can tiptoe upstairs.
And what? Put a slice of cheese under her door.
They both laughed.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Wasn't so bad after all.
They kissed, and then Kate started dozing off in Ian's arms, and Ian was not far behind her. The Legend of the Merry Milkmaids was written, read, and mixed by Giles Booth. It's a GSB Radio Enterprises production.